This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 375 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. Joining me from Melbourne, Victoria, Australia, once again from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Good evening, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
We got a special guest this episode.
No, I'm here every week.
Yes, you are. We have another special guest this episode.
I'd like to dedicate this episode.
Yes. Who to this time?
The lovely Alexander Lewis from Helsinki, Finland.
Excellent.
He liked our Facebook page this week.
Did he? Champion.
Yes. Look at that. He might never listen to an episode, but because Scott never came back.
No, that's right.
But we're foolish optimists. There's the optimist in me, see? It's the positive side. Pete's be coming back.
Yeah.
And I'll say, welcome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Hello, Alexander.
There we go. And yes, we've got a special guest. Who's coming on?
Joe Edelman.
Joe Edelman is indeed.
He's going to join us later in the episode. So we're going to crank through some stuff.
He can't join us earlier in the episode because
that's right.
He'd already be on. There'd be no point introducing him.
That's exactly right.
So, funny how that happens.
So we'll cover a few quick stories. And then yes. we'll go to the interview.
Yes.
Something that came up through the week that I thought was rather interesting is, and there's been a lot of talk of this over the last few months, but it seems to be gaining some traction, and that is that Microsoft seems to be warming to the idea of including Linux code into Windows. And
really?
A part of this move has meant that they announced last week, or in the last week or week and a bit, that within the Windows App Store, they are releasing three versions of Linux. And these are popular versions of Linux, like Fedora, Ubuntu.
Well, they wouldn't release unpopular ones, would they?
No, that's right. So it's Fedora, same. Ubuntu, and...
This episode's got a theme.
Sorry?
This episode's got a theme.
Has it?
Yeah, we wouldn't introduce somebody who's already been on the show. They wouldn't introduce non-popular episodes, versions.
Right. Okay. So anyway, so that made me think, well, this is pretty cool because I've been prattling on for the last 12 months about how great Darktable is. Anybody that wants to try it on Windows will now have the opportunity to run a virtual environment of Linux inside of Windows 10. And you could then install Darktable in the Linux partition inside Windows.
Lovely.
Yeah, I think so. So, yeah. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that to everybody's attention. Now, for some people, the idea of running, sandboxes with virtual environments and other operating systems inside other operating systems, probably all too hard, and they're just going to go, what? I'll stick to Lightroom. And that's fine. But for anyone that's interested in, giving it a go, but wasn't quite at the stage where I was, where you were prepared to completely change operating system on your machine, then this is an opportunity to dip your toe in the water. And, if anyone wants to have a look at Darktable, go have a squiz. So anyway, yeah.
Or watch a YouTube video.
Yeah, or that.
even less intrusive to your system.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Steve Peters posted an interesting story on the Facebook wall this week. We've all seen and heard and read about the Trash the Dress sessions. This guy took it one step further of actually burning the dress while the model
Didn't we talk about this last week?
Was wearing it. Did we? I didn't think we had.
Oh, it's a different burning dress one. I'll just look at the picture. Because we talked about a burning wedding dress one last week.
Oh, did we?
And this is a different burning wedding dress.
Okay, yeah. Maybe we did cover it last week.
But the guy had this beautiful pink sky and beautiful sky, and then in the actual photographs, it was all black in the background. And
right.
Maybe I was just talking to somebody else about it.
I think so. I don't remember us covering it on the podcast.
Really? Okay.
But who knows?
Talk about it once you'd hung up, I probably talked about it on the podcast then.
Yeah, maybe. but it does. you know, it once again raises the issue of, you know, what sort of risks. What sort of risks are you prepared to take, and what sort of indemnity have you got if it all goes pear shaped?
Well, you're in deep trouble.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
You can't insure against stupidity.
No,
on both the model, the photographer, or the assistants, everyone who is there who didn't at some stage go, you know what? We can just add flames in Photoshop and not potentially kill anybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's just plain stupid, frankly. I mean, no, seriously, you go and ask any stuntman about the work involved to be set on fire, the risks, the risk management, all the precautions, and then ask them how many times they get burnt, even with all that stuff.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you every single shoot they get burnt.
Yeah, right.
Even with all the incredible precautions they put on board.
Yeah.
And they're these people who've got somebody standing there with a probably with a fire extinguisher, and that's it. And let's face it, this is fabric. This can melt and mold to your skin.
Yeah.
So even if you can put out the flames, it's burning hot.
Yeah.
Melted fabric.
Yep.
It's going to burn you anyway. It's beyond stupid.
If it's any kind of synthetic fabric, it's going to melt rather than burn.
Here's the thing: there's 2,500 shares and 2,500 likes and all this stuff. I mean, why are we doing this? I mean, what are we trying to prove? Yeah. So let's look at some of the comments. I'm curious to see what the comments are. Unfathomably stupid. Oh, here's one: pollution of the ocean. Because that's the first thing you think about, not the death of the bride. You know. Hilarious that people can get so indignant about some propellant and burnt skin, the burnt silk in the ocean when companies dump millions of gallons of toxins. Yeah. There we go. Once again, people complaining about propellant going into the ocean.
Priorities,
supremely
people.
Dangerous. There we go. I can't see this catching on. Boom, boom. Oh, Hence it's catching on. What a ripoff. Try Googling John Michael Cooper and Joan of Arc. Yeah, but in the end. On and on and on and on. Who is responsible when she gets seriously burned?
Yeah.
Seriously stupid. I don't mean, it's Darwin Award. That's who's, the best.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm just thinking, who's going to be on the wrong end of the lawsuit when the husband, decides to sue?
Now, I'm sure you're getting this person to sign indemnity waivers.
Yeah.
But if you're not a lawyer, when you write up that and have a lawyer check it out, there's going to be loopholes all over.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're thinking about doing stuff like that, go and learn how to do it in Photoshop.
Yeah, exactly.
Or stop listening to the podcast.
Yeah. The other story that Steve sent us was a humorous piece from the blog of Andy Hutchinson Photography. It's The Real Meaning of Common Photographic Expressions. I don't think we need to summarize this. You can go and check out the link if you want to have a little chuckle to yourselves. Adam sent us the story from Petapixel about a music festival that wants you, as the photographer, to pay them.
No, why didn't they ask me then? Oh, hang on a second. There we are.
What?
To pay them.
To pay them $500 so that you can have the pleasure of shooting their concert festival thingamajiggy for them.
Would you like my opinion on that one?
Yeah.
That's damn smart.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
And someone will pay.
Absolutely. Tons of people will pay it. What a great idea.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's fabulous. You know what? If you pay for the privilege to do that shoot, you're going to make sure, A, the photos are good.
Yeah.
B, you're going to try and get them out absolutely everywhere. They'll be promoting their festival left, right, and center, as well as paying them for the privilege. What a supremely smart idea.
I'd want to know that as the photographer, you had the right to do whatever you wanted to do with those images.
You can imagine. You imagine it would have to be in the clause. Imagine,
yeah. Because if you're having to pay for the privilege, you'd want to have the rights to those images. You certainly wouldn't want to be paying for the privilege of shooting and then not owning the rights to the images.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wouldn't be at all surprised if there's a fine print that says you don't own the images. That wouldn't surprise me one bit.
I love it. That'd be funny.
Yeah. Anyway, Rob Coates sent us a comment via the show notes on shuttersincpodcast.com through the week. And he said, hey,
was it nice?
Hey, yous blokes. How come we've got to wait another 26 episodes before we get to vote on whether you should continue the podcast or not?
Oh, that's gold. That's gold. Well, I reckon if we get maybe we get like a fundraising thing going, if we get enough people donating money to make us stop early, you know, yeah, I reckon if we get 10 people to pledge $50, before episode 400, we'll stop recording Shutter Zinc.
Speak for yourself. I never said
and then the next week we start recording Shutter Inc. We just drop the S off.
Right.
Well, I said we'll stop recording that under that name.
Yeah.
Or it could be Shutter Sync. See?
Yeah, exactly.
It's all the same letters. Just move the S over it.
Oh, dear.
That's gold, Rob. Absolutely gold.
Yeah. Thanks, Rob. And someone else commented, I don't know if it was on Facebook, I saw a comment somewhere, somebody else basically chiming in along the same line of reasoning. Like, don't know where that was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it was on Facebook. It must have been a comment or a reply to a comment or something, because I couldn't find it this evening when I went looking for it, but I know it's...
Maybe they changed their minds.
Yeah. So anyway, what did you want to have a chat about before we get to our interview with Joe?
Well, I've had a busy week.
Oh, okay.
I've got my Cradle Mountain weekend workshop. Oh, did we talk about that last week or not?
I don't know if we did,
but anyway, even if I did or didn't, we're doing a Cradle Mountain Tasmanian workshop in the end of November this year.
I lose track because I see those posters appear on the Facebook feed and I see them in your Instagram feed, and then I don't know whether we've actually spoken on the podcast about it or whether I've just seen it via social media.
I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to remember. I do so many things.
I know you're doing a thing with Seng over in the West.
Yep, so we've got the Wheat Belt, Western Australian Wheat Belt weekend on, and that's got seven places left. That's in the end of July.
That's my home turf. Beverly's only...
Is it really?
Yeah, hour and a half from where I was born. I love that area. I love that area.
Really?
Yes.
Well, it's going to be pretty cool. We've got this nice farm to shoot on, and we've got this big wave rock type, strange rock formations and stuff to shoot in, which will be pretty cool.
Which rock? Not wave rock.
No, it's the third largest wave rock. So there's like three wave rocks in Western Australia.
It's not Kokobin Rock, is it?
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
At Shackleton. You're only 20 minutes from where I was born.
Shh. Getting closer, we'll be there.
There we go. Kokobin Rock.
It's going to be a fun weekend. It's a couple of days. So we'll be doing astrophotography out there in the desert, there in the bush.
Nice.
We'll be doing model shoots.
It's a good dark sky area. It's a good dark sky area.
Yeah, maybe a couple of landscapey type shots too. There's a lake down there with some sunken trees with sunrise. Could be kind of cool.
Yeah.
But the Cradle Mountain Tasmania once, it's a 2.5 day event. So it's shooting Friday afternoon with a model shoot. Friday night, we're doing an astro shoot over Cradle Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Then sunrise, landscape shoot. Then model shoots during the day. Beautiful lunch all prepared for us. Model shoots in the afternoon. Sunset shoots as landscapes. Mm-hmm. And then repeat again the next day. So it's going to be a pretty full-on couple of days.
Nice. And when's that?
12. Well, that's in November 17 to 19.
Nice.
There's 12 maximum people going, and we've only got 8 places left. So, but only got announced, opened up for sale yesterday. So
nice.
It's going pretty quick. And and somebody's had to pull out of my psychotic break weekend.
Oh, no.
Up here in Western Victoria. So I've got 2 places open now. A couple's had to pull out.
Okay.
So for my end of, there's still lots of, October, whatever it is. There's plenty of time for that.
Yep.
So it's all rather fine and dandy, I just sort of say that.
Yeah.
This week, I've got a heavy week this week. I'm training 18 people on 2 workshops, and then I've got to shoot a wedding.
Wow.
The next 3 days, pretty full on, and the weather forecast is for a bigger rainfall dump than the cyclone that just went through recently. Yeah.
They're saying a month's worth of rain in the next 3 days.
Next 3 days, yeah. Which is not so bad if it's the middle of summer when it doesn't rain very much. But when it's a month's worth of rain from the middle of winter, that's quite a bit of rain.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a bit of fun, especially when I'm looking forward to my natural light portrait workshop when there's no natural clouds.
Something tells me you're going to be shooting a lot of indoor stuff through open windows. you know, or yeah, windows with curtains half drawn kind
well,
of stuff.
Problem is where I'm, what, the venue I'm working on, there's no windows, no real good windows.
Oh, okay.
So oy. That's gonna be fun. No good windows, and you've got to go outside. The challenges we have.
Nice.
And then this week, I've been asked this week, there's a online photo group called, it's a strange name, they're called DSLR, but it stands for Digital Showcase of Lens Riders.
Right.
It is odd. I don't know what it means. But they're a big Indian photo group. Tens of thousands of photographers all over India are in this group.
Wow.
And I've got to say, in my Facebook feed, As I see stuff go through, people's photos, stuff go through, the photos that stand out the most to me just about every week are from this group.
Oh, okay.
They have some astoundingly good photographers.
You know? Yeah, right.
And anyway, so they want to do a week-long feature of me, which is rather nice of them.
Wow.
So what they're going to be doing is every day for 6 days, they've been posting an image, which we'll talk about. And then on the seventh day, we'll do a live stream, talk about photography, question and answer session.
Nice.
So that's going to be kind of nice. I'll keep people informed when that's on if anyone wants to have a listen in.
Well, once you've set it up, feel free to post on the Shutters Inc. page on Facebook with the link, and then that way people can just click straight through from our page to wherever you're doing the thing.
So there you go. You're trying to get a few people going to our page,
huh? This technological thing, mate, it's the future.
I like the way you think. And the last thing I want to talk about is I saw the Canon Australia released their financials.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is it on the up and up?
Well, Canon being the biggest organisation, and I thought it made interesting reading when you read stuff. So Canon Australia, despite being the biggest brand, selling $679 million in product in Australia over the course of the year, and paying no tax, and selling against retailers, still managed a $34 million loss.
Wow.
So over the past 6 years, 2011 to 2016, Canon Australia has made sales of over $4 billion with profits after tax of a meager $19 million.
That's
so $19 million profit, $4 billion in sales.
Yikes.
During this period, it's paid no net tax. It's enjoyed tax benefits from the tax department of over $20 million.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't for the tax benefits, it would have lost money because they got $19 million profit, but $20 million of it was a tax rebate.
Yeah.
They would have lost money, $1 million on $4 billion in sales.
Wow.
So Canada Australia has contributed income tax. It paid $561,000 on a profit of $4.1 million. And in 2015, it paid $1 million on a loss of $3.3 million, accruing franking credits in the process.
Right.
So the biggest brand in photography in Australia, and obviously the world, and nothing for 6 years profit-wise.
Wow.
Let's call it revenue neutral at the end of all that.
That is just shocking.
It's kind of a fair indication of what our industry is like, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
If such a major organization can't make a dollar.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? They don't support the retailers because they sell against them.
What's the problem? Is it the fact that people aren't replacing their camera bodies as frequently because what they've got is good enough to keep shooting with?
Well, the sales are only down $40 million from last year. So it's not like they're still
on annual sales of $650 million.
Well, this year was 671 of winners, and last year was over, just a touch over 700.
Okay, so that's around about a 6.5-7% drop.
Yeah, but if you can't make a profit on over $4 billion, you still don't make a profit. That small drop doesn't make an iota of difference.
Yeah,
I mean, part of the problem is trying to be somewhat price competitive with overseas.
Yep.
Whilst working in a country where they want pay the tax.
Yeah.
They wanted to pay GST tax.
Yep.
They want to pay all the staff at Canon want holidays, like 4 weeks holidays a year. They want free medical. They want a holiday bonus pay. They want all the other luxuries that we get in our high weekly wage.
Yeah.
And so does the guy delivering the stock and the guy taking it off the boat and then the guy taking it to the store and then the guy selling it. All these people want a decent wage.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah, you can't maintain price competitiveness overseas, yet giving everyone else all these luxuries, all these high ends. I mean, I'll tell you right now, the worker in Hong Kong doesn't get 4 weeks annual leave.
No.
Yeah, he doesn't get free health insurance.
Yeah.
He doesn't get, yeah, was it 12 public holidays a year and all on and on and on and on.
And I'll guarantee a lot of those grey import purchases aren't coming out of a bricks and mortar store that's got carpet and nice lights and all that sort of stuff. It's just a warehouse with much lower overhead.
And once again, they're not paying tax.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so that you can understand where over the last 6 years when it's been at its most prevalent, you'd say I wouldn't say 6 years, maybe over the last 10 years, the online grey markets have been the most prevalent in Australia.
Yeah.
That they've obviously, it's a struggle to make a dollar.
Yeah.
But you got to start thinking, it's a bit like all these people who pirate movies and music. At some point, people are going to stop making movies and stop making music because there's no money in it.
Yeah.
At some point, Canon's going to say, let's just not bother.
Yeah.
We've sold 400 billion worldwide and we've got nothing to show at the end of it.
Yeah.
At some point, our insistence on buying everything from everywhere else but from our own backyard at some stage will come and bite us on the bum.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I just thought it was very interesting figures from Canon. But, you know, not saying Canon's altruistic. I mean, their whole point of selling against retailers, I think, is disgraceful.
Yeah, totally.
They're taking money out of retail. So, yeah, they sell to a retail, then they go compete against them.
Yeah.
They run competitions. Canon run these amazing photo competitions to get email addresses to then market direct sales at them.
Yeah.
Rather than supporting a retail infrastructure where there's actually people behind a counter who want to talk to you about photography and want to talk to you about cameras.
Yeah, let's face it, if you are in the market for a new camera, at the end of the day, I think most of us would, I hope everyone would agree that, well, speaking from personal experience, I would prefer to talk to a human being than simply spend days and days and days of Googling and looking at specs and trying to work out whether I should buy this body or that body. If I could go and talk to somebody who knew all of the product range that I was looking at, then that's a far better experience.
Yeah, but you know, majority of people go and do that and then go home and buy it online.
Yeah, right.
So they go and milk, they go and take advantage of that knowledge and that passion.
Yep.
Use up all that skill, use up all that person's time where they're not making any money for the store they're working for.
Yep.
Then go home and buy because it's $50 cheaper somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way of the world. Yeah. It's anyway.
So maybe retail needs to come up with a way to somehow incentivize the local purchase without it being a drop in price.
But there's no money. There's no money. No one makes any money. Every single camera that gets sold, effectively, once you run the cost of running a business, paying wages, etc., the stores effectively lose money.
Yeah.
If all you do is sell a camera, you effectively so you've got to sell accessories and so on. Because that's the only place where there's a bit of profit where they can actually maybe make a few bucks. But you sell a $5,000 camera, with maybe a brand name lens. And you probably lost $300 on the sale at the end of the day. Jeez. You know, if you don't want to sell too many, if you can avoid it, you've got to sell a fair whack of extra accessories just to make it profitable for the store. You know, it's a tough business.
Yeah.
Remember, Australia has some of the most expensive real estate.
Retail leasing prices. Yep.
Yeah, of anywhere else in the world. So you got to fork that into account, as well. You know, if you're paying $500,000 a year for a small space, that's a lot of cameras you got to sell to make that back.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough negativity. Let's talk about something positive.
Well, look, there's one story I accidentally glossed over, and I didn't mean to. I just happened to. I don't know, my eyes focused on the wrong part of my little text document here. And this was another one that was submitted by Adam. Photographer loses $20,000 in gear after airplane carry-on bag was taken.
I thought we were talking about something positive.
Well, you were. So you got to wonder, was this an intentional, bait and switch? Did someone leave
an empty... Well, you certainly know what a camera bag looks like, don't you?
Well, it's hard to know whether, this was a case of someone had a bag that looked similar and they accidentally picked it up, but the fact that they haven't come forward to offer the gear back would suggest that it was a deliberate.
I guarantee if this guy's carrying $20,000 of camera gear in his bag, whoever picks it up would not be surprised by the weight.
Yeah, exactly.
Their own bag would have to be – and there's nothing in the article that I can see there about finding a similar bag that had been left behind. Right. Here's the other thing too. I mean, why would you never not have that bag directly above your head?
Well, sometimes if you get on the plane late, you can find that there's no space left right above your head.
Yeah. So you got to at the very least make sure it goes behind you, not in front of you.
Yeah, right.
Okay. As long as I would ask, the first question you ask is, when we arrive, will the plane be deboarding front and back?
Yeah.
If they say no, only from the front, say, okay, the bag's got to be behind me.
Yep.
Because if I've got 20 people standing in front of me and somebody's picked up my bag, well, I've got no hope.
Yeah, exactly.
But if they're behind me trying to get out with it, well, they're not going to be able to get out.
They're not getting
out. And then you simply make it. You simply make it their responsibility, their host's responsibility. I'm holding you personally liable.
Yeah.
If you put this somewhere where I can't have easy access to it and something happens to it, I'm holding you personally liable. And I'll be recording it on my phone, my little voice memo. Yeah.
Or a video.
You've got to protect yourself. Yeah. You've got to protect yourself these days and say, look, yeah, this is, I understand, but can we maybe move this bag of oranges from here up the front and put my bag here or something, you know?
Yeah.
There's lots of maybe options. I would never have it that far out of my sight. I mean, remember, I carry stuff on planes a lot and I'm always wary.
It does say in the blog post that if you can't get it in the overhead lockers, you can always store bags under the seat in front of you.
Yeah, which wouldn't go if it was that big bag, the camera bag generally wouldn't fit under.
Yeah.
But you know what you can also do? The hosties have other. You know, I'm told, I don't know if this is true, most planes have a coffin, a little place where they can shove a body.
Oh, really?
A coffin. It's a little cupboard where you can shove a body if someone dies.
Right.
there's places where they can put other bags. There are other places that can put bags.
Yeah.
Not for everybody, of course, but if necessary, you know.
Yeah. And I think if you're traveling with that much hardware of that particular value, you really would want to make a few extra, efforts to protect it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And once again, it's a great great advertisement for insurance, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Full disclosure, Glenn does camera insurance if you need some.
No, I don't.
Don't you? Yeah. You used to.
No, that was years ago.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Too busy these days. Right. Okay. Too busy these days napping.
Right. Well, anyway, listen, let's get on to our interview. I reached out to...
Who are you talking to?
To Joe Edelman.
Joe, that's right.
And I told him, that we'd given him a plug on the podcast, and so he reached out and he said, "Hey, if you ever want me to come on the podcast, have a chat." And I said, "Yeah, great, let's do that." So, Joe Edelman, welcome to Shutters Inc.
Hey, Bruce, how are you? Good to talk to you.
Likewise, welcome along. I discovered your YouTube channel two or three weeks ago. And Glenn is here too.
Hey, Glenn, how are you? So, if you just discovered me 2 or 3 weeks ago, it means you've been goofing off for a really long time.
It does. I know. But I've got to say, I'm really enjoying your videos. They're beautifully produced. Well done.
Thank you.
There's so much crap content on YouTube that it's...
Bruce, just quickly, before you go on, one of the things I love the most about Joe's videos is that when he does them, he records them. Yeah. And when he records them, the footage is then saved.
Yes.
And then he can do stuff with that footage.
Glenn's having a subtle
dig at me. I love that about Joe's videos.
Because we had a slight technical glitch at the beginning of this recording.
I mean, when you didn't hit record.
That's shorthand for Bruce forgot to hit record.
That's right. That's exactly right. As I was going to say, there's so much crap on YouTube that it's really exciting when you find an entire channel of really good content. So well done to you for that.
Thank you, Bruce. I really hadn't noticed that there was a lot of junk on YouTube. God.
Really?
Yeah. I better pay more attention.
No.
Have you been living in the dark?
Yeah, apparently.
Now, we were going to have a conversation about, shoots that went pear-shaped when I thought it was only going to be you and I having a chat, but we've managed to reschedule so that Glenn was able to join us. And the topic of conversation we were thinking of was shoots that went sideways.
Right.
And I was going to ask, how did you cope with those kinds of situations? And your response was?
My response was, I haven't had a whole lot of shoots go sideways. And it's not like, oh, because I'm amazing. It's just, I'm a control freak.
Yeah.
So I put a lot of planning into what I do. And I've learned as I've gotten older to pull out of a shoot if necessary. If I've got a client that's got unrealistic expectations or is just impossible to deal with, I'll walk away from the shoot before it gets to the point where I've got a camera in my hand.
Yeah, right. Do you have to do that often?
I wouldn't say often, but definitely I've done it more as I've gotten older. I think it's the difference between being young and dumb and willing to rush into any opportunity or what is seems like an opportunity.
Yep.
You know, as I've gotten older and probably been burned a few times along the way and learned to kind of see the problems coming, I've been willing to, you know, put my foot down and say, hey, this, you know, this is just not a good fit. And I think it's best if we both go
separate different ways.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, nice.
But if anyone's ever done anything dealing with the public, you'll have come across experiences like that. I know wedding photographers especially, they know a bridal couple is going to be a nightmare even before they when they first meet them. And, sure. Oh, look, I'm busy that day. Look, I've double booked or whatever. there's a lot of telltale giveaways that once you've done it a few times, you can be fairly, yeah. You can be fairly circumspect and get out of it before it becomes an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that to have any kind of a long-term career in this business, I think it's very important for especially young photographers to learn that because your reputation is everything. And, yeah. You know, once you take the picture, regardless of the circumstances, and I get this all the time from young photographers or even more experienced ones for that matter, they'll show me a picture. And as part of the backstory, wow, yeah, you know, that model, she was such a pain in the butt because I couldn't get her to do this or the client was this. And it's all these reasons why the shot didn't turn out the way they wanted. And I always kind of look at them perplexed and ask them, like, so you're telling me when you pressed the button, there was apparently someone there with a gun to your head threatening to pull the trigger if you didn't shoot it right now, like right this second.
Yeah.
And they usually don't like that analogy. But the point is, once you go click, there's an expectation that you've created a good picture.
Yep.
And if you know that you are in a situation where you can't do that, or you know you're walking into a situation where you're not going to be able to meet those expectations, you're just setting yourself up to fail. So I guess for me, I'd rather be known as a bit of a pain in the butt who has standards as opposed to the guy that's going to say yes to everything and then just turn out a bunch of junk along the way.
Yeah, nice.
I mean, for my own personal experience is very much along Joe's as well, where the only real complete snafus are often completely out of everybody's control. It might be an environmental thing.
Right.
You know, you're doing a beach shoot and it's howling wind and sand flying everywhere. I mean, there's stuff that happens that you don't have much control over. And then there's other sort of freer shoots where you go in with a set idea that you plan to shoot and for varying ranges of reasons it's not happening, but you end up shooting something that's good but different than your original plan.
Oh, I agree. That's a working philosophy for me anyway. In fact, I have a video. Go ahead and I'll pitch one of my videos.
Since do you do Bruce videos,
apparently
Joe?
Has not seen all of them yet. It's a video called Work the Shot. And the idea is that going into any shoot, no matter how much planning you've done, no matter how convinced you are in your mind as to exactly how you want your light, how you want your pose, how you want your camera angles, it's always worth pushing beyond that because if you don't, it's actually kind of arrogant to think that you're that good that you nailed it like first time.
Yeah.
There's always other possibilities that are there to be found. So for me, that's a big part of my normal workflow to just, you know, go ahead. And sometimes it's simple. Sometimes it's just, it might be the difference between going from a vertical shot to a horizontal shot. You know, other times it's playing camera angles a little bit. Other times it is changing the lighting. Other times it's like, hey, if I crop this different and switch over to black and white, if it's for a model's portfolio, I can actually get two completely different shots out of this. Right. And, you know, so it's really just looking to see what else is there. So, I'm with you on that.
Shoot the shot. If you can, you shoot the shot that you have in mind. But before you change everything wholesale, what else can you do?
Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely. In the same setup, if I stand over here, if she looks over there, if we move the light here without changing everything. And what I find is people, they'll do a shot and then they'll frantically run around trying to find what the next shot's going to be.
Yes, exactly.
Where there might be 10 other shots right where they were.
Yep.
Now, Joe, you mentioned a potential topic of conversation for this episode of the podcast as to why you think the majority of photographic workshops suck.
Right.
Glyn makes a living out of workshops.
Sure. I mean, let's be fair. The reason I suggested that topic is because originally you told me that Glyn wasn't going to take the time to be here for my interview. So I figured, hey, if he's going to go do a workshop, let me talk about how much that workshop sucks.
So I'm keen to see where you pair take this.
I think Joe should become a regular, is all I'm saying.
So, there you go.
So, I don't know
either of you guys that well. I will admit that since Bruce reached out to me, I've also been listening to some of your podcasts and do find them very entertaining.
Oh, cool.
And I think ultimately...
Lacking in content, but entertaining, is that what you're saying?
Well, I wasn't going to go there. I was trying to be nice.
That's actually a motto.
Right. So I think ultimately that Glyn won't disagree with me too much when I kind of explain the statement.
Okay.
So, you know, one of the things that I have learned as a photography educator, and this started, I guess, years ago, but I wasn't aware of it when I was just teaching a little community education program for a local school district. So it was people that just bought their first camera and, you know, they were trying to figure out how to use it. And then back in 2009, when I did my first YouTube video, which, by the way, I'm willing to admit was god awful horrible. And Bruce, you have to promise me never to listen to it since you're an audio person. You will shame me severely.
Hey, at least you hit record.
Well, that's true. I did hit record, but yes.
You 100% up on there.
The audio would have been better if I had not hit record. Let's put it that way. So, but as I started, you know, doing more and more of this, I learned one key element about this photo education thing. And it's something that was a trigger that I learned when I started YouTube, and I become more and more aware of it. And it's really what I try to fight against with my videos. And that is this simple premise. People are lazy. And that's why most photography workshops suck. So the statement that a photography workshop sucks, it's not really about the instructor, because obviously there are some top-notch photographers who are also top-notch teachers whose skill level as photographers are far beyond mine. So I'm not taking a stab at any accomplished photographer. Certainly, we all know there are some people teaching workshops that shouldn't even have a camera. But,
yeah.
Right. But what happens is I find that a lot of people go to workshops with the wrong expectations. And we can split it into a couple examples. And Glyn, I'm sure that you've encountered most of these examples. So example one, it will be a workshop, and obviously I know nothing about your workshop, Glyn, but it may be a workshop where there are going to be a few models, so maybe the instructor is going to do kind of like a little demo or a little bit of instruction, and then it's like hands-on time, and the idea you're getting some one-on-one tutoring while you're photographing the models, which sounds, for all marketing purposes and concept, it sounds like a great idea. But a lot of the people that will pay the money to go to that kind of workshop, they have one goal in mind. That is to build their portfolio and be able to post pictures on Facebook. Now, they'll tell you they want to learn, and they may pick up a nugget or two while they're there. But the problem is they're going to spend a pretty decent amount of money. And they walk into a situation where, number one, they have no control. We've already talked about how important control is to a photographer. They don't get to pick the outfits. They don't get to pick the makeup. They don't get to pick the hairstyles. Hell, they don't get to pick the model. They oftentimes can't make any changes. And while they are shooting, there are, gosh, anywhere from 5 to 25 other people there talking, shooting over their shoulder, having conversations with the model while they're trying to take their pictures. And even if things go really, really well, at the end of the day, they've got a set of pictures that every other attendee has. So they haven't created anything that is unique or is going to set their work apart. And they only really got half a learning experience, because the fact is, I don't care how good the demonstration or the lecture is. We all know from experience that stuff is ultimately worthless if you don't go and try it. Like, one of the things I always push when I do teach, if I'm doing any kind of a workshop, when it comes time for shooting, I literally, if I have to, I will bully people to try the things that I have suggested in my talk and explain to them, look, I'm not saying my way is the best. You're welcome to hate my way. All I'm asking you is trust me and try it. so that you have that visual experience of seeing what it looks like, going through the steps, and then instead of it being just an opinion, which is a bunch of hot air, it's going to be an experience that you had, and that experience is still going to move the meter for you in one direction or another. It's going to move you further towards what you used to do because it's going to convince you that this is absolutely not the type of technique you like, or it's going to pull you a little further away from what you did, realizing that, okay, I don't completely like what Edelman does or the way he does it, but if I use this piece, or if I do just a little bit of this, this makes what I'm doing look better. So it becomes a more solid experience. So I don't do a lot of workshops for that reason, but when I do, and I do want people to shoot, I make it very, very clear, like, don't come with the idea that you're going to get a bunch of pictures to post on, you know, Facebook or Model Mayhem or any of those websites, because I don't care about that. I'm going to make you try the things that I'm teaching so that instead of having opinions about what you like, you can form opinions based on actually experiencing these things that we're talking about.
Yeah, nice.
So that's kind of the gist of it. So the reason why workshops suck, it's simply because people go with the wrong expectations. Or it's the idea of, you know, people will go to, and I'm sure these guys have been down in Australia as well, but like a Scott Kelby workshop or even a Joe McNally workshop. I mean, Joe McNally, we're talking obviously an incredible photographer, Incredibly accomplished. He's going to do a workshop. There's going to be 200 people there. So he's going to be up on a stage. He's going to do a demo. And if he's doing a smaller workshop, you're basically going to be razzle dazzled by this guy. So you can listen to him. You're going to get a lot of insight, but you don't really get anything from that workshop unless you turn right around and go and do it.
Yeah.
Bruce, you went to that workshop, didn't you?
I did. Joe came down to Australia about, I don't know, must be 4 years ago now, I guess. Okay. And I paid the $1,000 Australian to go and do that workshop for a day.
So. Oh, sorry, hay fever.
And thankfully, you know, being a smaller market, Joe, we were lucky to have a small workshop with Joe where there was only about 20, 25 attendees. So that meant you did actually get a chance to talk to him and you know, question him and that sort of thing. But you're right. It's very easy to be sort of blown away by how easy someone like him makes it all look.
Sure.
He would pull these absolutely phenomenal looking images, you know, with what appeared to be the most basic of setups. Right. And yes, we would then get sent off to try these different techniques out. But you're right. I mean, I'm certainly guilty of not employing it enough. You know, if you've listened to this podcast of late, you will have heard me bemoaning the fact that I have not picked up my camera enough in the last 12 months. And, that's my problem. That's all me. I can't blame anyone else for that. You know, it's up to me to get it out of the bag and go and shoot something. And I just haven't made the time to do that.
Right. And that's a really common problem, Bruce. I mean, what you're describing is really very normal. So here's my question to you, though.
Yep.
And again, this is obviously no disrespect to Joe McNally, because I think the man is amazing. But so you spent $1,000 equivalent in Australian to go spend this day with him.
Yep.
That's $8.50 US, by the way, Joe.
I'm sorry, what's that?
That's $8.50 US. Right. US.
$8.50.
So did you learn that much?
Not really.
Right. So in other words, your money would have been better spent elsewhere, and your time would have been better spent elsewhere, like with a camera, by yourself, not being entertained, and actually generating experiences for yourself.
Quite possibly.
Even if you had a mannequin in front of you.
Yes.
Like just generating experiences. And so hence that's kind of the foundation for my point. And that's really not to do the pitch here, but that's the whole point behind my YouTube channel.
Yeah.
When I decided, so a year ago, it's actually, almost a full year now, I decided to go full time with this YouTube thing.
Right.
And my excuse is, I still don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up. So that's my excuse. That's all I got.
Nice.
So I decided, you know what? I'm going to do this. So I built a business model around it. I put a plan together. It wasn't just a complete like, hey, let's go do something insane. But I put this plan together. And my big challenge was, what can I bring to the table? Because, you know, I'm not a Joe McNally or a Joel Grimes or a Lindsay Adler. I'm not these people that have, you know, incredible portfolios with incredible teams. I'm not the razzle dazzle guy. And that's actually what a lot of their videos are. It's like, it's cool to watch, but how much meat are you really getting? Not a lot.
Yeah.
So for me, I thought, okay, what I have is 40 plus years that I've at least managed to pay my bills.
Nice.
With cameras.
Nice.
So I've got a lot of the kind of how and why and the decision making behind it. And so that's really been the focus. And then one other full disclosure, because I'm not that brilliant, one of the other things that has helped me a lot, my wife, bless her, is a PhD in cognitive psychology. And one of her areas of research, unfortunately for me, it's cognitive psychology, because if she was like a social psychologist, I'd be in a straitjacket.
It's like, don't listen to this podcast.
Yeah. So, but fortunately, one of her areas of research is actually how people and how the brain actually learns. So she has really also taught me a lot in terms of how to really just connect with people and to get people to kind of understand concepts and you know, et cetera. So that's, you know, that's the kind of how I got to this point. So yes, I'm kind of this little one-man crusade that's trying to get people to not buy as much equipment. So I expect that the camera companies will have a hit out on me anytime now. Not go to as many workshops. So people like Glenn will, you know, ban me.
Well, I still haven't had my reply to your workshop yet, so I'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, I know. I'm waiting. That's why. Why do you think I'm still talking, Glenn? Come on. I'm figuring, okay, they said about 30 minutes. If I eat up 28 of it, I'm in good shape here. So.
Now you've stopped.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Now I stopped.
I'll give you my reply to words. Now, I've done over 1,000. I do about 150 workshops a year.
Wow, good for you.
No, I said I do 150 workshops a year. You think that's a good thing?
Well, I hope you're making good money doing them.
If I was doing good, making good money, I'd only be doing 50 a year. If I was making great money, I'd be doing 10 a year.
That is a good analogy. Yes, I'll give you that.
So I've done well over 1,000 workshops and trained over 10,000-15,000 people. Mm-hmm. So here's my reply to Joe's. He's completely and absolutely bloody right. That's going to shock the listeners. I agreed with somebody. I have several openings I do at workshops. The beginning speech to people. In the US, it's a little different than here in Australia. So in the US, the first thing I always say is, I'd like to apologize for everything I say and do that pisses you off during this workshop. including using the word pisses you off. Right. That's my normal US starting. But in Australia, it's if you've come here to take photos, you've come to the wrong place.
Right.
If you've come here to take pretty photos, you've come to the wrong place. But if you've come here to learn how to see, to get somebody's viewpoint about how to light something, and then how you can incorporate that lighting into what you want to do yourself, you've come to the right place. If you've come to learn to take photos like me, you've definitely come to the wrong place, because even I don't want to take photos like I do. Yeah. What we're here to do today is to learn to see. We want to take lots of behind-the-scenes photos. Where was the light positioned? Where's the model positioned in relation to that light? Why did it work this way? And how can I incorporate that myself into my photos? The last thing we want is half a dozen pretty photos of somebody that we can't replicate. It's a complete and utter failure of both my time and your time. And majority of the people are happy with that. I even had a woman fly in from interstate recently for a workshop, and when I did that speech, she went, "Oh, thank God for that." She goes, "I go to so many workshops. I'm under so much pressure to take a good photograph when all I want to do is learn how to do it, not get that photo nailed." And that was the best thing ever, you know, when people can relax and say, "Okay, I don't care about the photo. If the model's picking her nose, it's fine."
Yeah.
But as long as you understand, why did we put the light there?
Why was it on that angle? Why did it have that modifier on it? And what was the effect of those things? And what do I do with it later? Then it's a success.
Yeah.
So that's my take on workshops.
So there you go, Bruce. I'm sorry. You thought we were going to have an argument.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's awesome.
We're very, very much on par with that stuff, which is great. You know? And as you say, there's so few people out there. I mean, most workshops are really look at me workshops.
Right. That drives me insane when you go to a workshop and the person spends 2 hours telling you about their career. It's like, really? Why the hell do I care? What are you going to do for me today? Teach me something.
I read your bio. Shut up and teach.
Right, exactly. Right. Well, plus you think about it. If you didn't read the person's bio, you were that dumb that you paid the money to go to the workshop? Like,
exactly.
You know,
so, yeah. Exactly. If I knew nothing about you, it's all self-flagellation. It really is.
Yeah.
And there is that. And for these higher end guys running workshops, it's really the cult of personality. People are going there because it's Joe. Not because of the way Joe makes photographs work, and how can I get that skill level into my work?
Yep.
Yeah.
People like Bruce are a classic example. You know, they see the value in, or they think there's the value in spending that $1,000.
Right.
But knowing their lifestyle, they'll never ever be able to put that effort involved to get their work up to that kind of level as well.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, that's no insult on Bruce, but I mean the amount of people. So I teach, for example, I do off camera. I do lots of different types of workshops, but one of them is off camera flash, mm-hmm. and it's all about the mathematics of flash. Okay, right. So it's understanding how to calculate flash exposure using math. And people, they have a light
coming back. By the way,
pardon?
I said I hate math. By the way,
I hate math. Well, a lot of people do, you know. But the problem is with someone like, I was not want to pick on Joe, but someone like Joe McNally. Right. His flash is all based around TTL, off-camera TTL. Right. And understanding the vagaries of that system and knowing when to under and overexpose his flash exposure without even taking the shot when he's running
multiple
flashes.
Well, let's face it, if you watch any of Joe McNally's videos or if you read his books on the Nikon flashes, he's thinking fully manual.
Yes.
He understands how that Nikon CLS system works better than the damn flash units understand how they
exactly
work.
Right. Exactly right.
So he's
right.
being paid by Nikon to tout the TTL. And that's the thing that I have a hard time getting people to grasp that. It's like, look, yes, he makes it look so simple. He uses TTL. He is able to use TTL in such extreme circumstances because he thoroughly understands light. And he understands how those strobes are working better than the strobes understand.
Yeah, he understands their level of confusion. And and the problem is that's 30 years of experience. I can't teach that. I can't teach 30 years of experience in a six-hour workshop.
Exactly, right.
But I can teach you math. I can teach you that 2 plus 2 equals 4.
Right.
And if you know 2 plus 2 equals 4, then you can do this. Whereas you go away from a Joe McNally one, and you probably, even if you had the same gear, you probably still can't because you don't understand it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the problem is, once again, the math of flash gets more, it has easy versions and it gets more and more complex as you go along. But if you don't go and practice that math over the following weeks, you're going to forget it.
Sure.
Because you learn with a conscious brain.
Yeah.
You store everything with it. Once you know something, it's stored in the subconscious brain.
Yep.
And the problem is, workshops, you learn consciously. And if you don't practice, you don't get a chance to form the long term memory and it's gone.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest failings I find. So I have people come to the same workshop several times.
Because,
I haven't done it for two years. And I love that. My bank manager recommends. Sure, my bank manager recommends you do every one of my workshops at least 3 times.
Yep.
it's a good thing, you know. And I love seeing people come back, but there's always that little bit of a feeling of failure when they come back. And whilst it's not my fault, you still feel like, oh, did I not make it simple enough? Did I not? Yeah. Cut through enough of the rubbish that's out there in the industry to make it simple enough for them to be able to do it. You know?
Right. And that's one of the challenges, you know, in terms of being a photo educator is coming to, at least I've learned, is coming to terms with the idea that you can't force people to learn. You can teach them. And, you know, for me, I need to be able to put my head on the pillow at the end of the day and know that I put good effort into teaching someone. But if they don't actually put the effort into learning, that's not on me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's frustrating, but it's not on me. I mean, there's only so much that I can control. So, yeah, I'm with you.
And what you always worry about, I'm a bit of a control freak too, Joe, that's why I like you so much, is that these people are talking about you behind your back.
Sure.
And because their failings, they're saying, yep. Oh, I went to his workshop, but, you know, I didn't learn that much.
Yep.
You know, I didn't get very much out of it, I still can't do it. Well, that's not my fault. That's your fault. But you're making it sound like my fault to these other people who may have then come along to my workshops, because almost all my business is word of mouth.
Right.
So
do people say that about your workshops all the time, though?
What, that I'm crap? No, just you.
Okay. I was just curious.
No, most people say, at the end of my workshop, they'll say, Glenn, this has been the best photographic workshop I've been to today.
That's a very common
sort of reply from a lot of people. It's like when I speak at camera clubs, because I know you speak at camera clubs too, Joe.
Sure.
And yep. I always win awards for best speaker that night.
Yeah.
Because I'm the only speaker that night. Or I win the award of best speaker since our last speaker. Yeah, I get lots of accolades. You know, so like I see in your bio, you're an award-winning photographer. Well, I've won plenty of awards like that.
Remind me never to talk live in Australia.
They're a hard market.
I thought they were tough here. Wow.
But yeah, so majority. Well, obviously my workshops must work, because I'm 9 years in. 1,000+ workshops in, and almost all of it's word of mouth. So
that's awesome.
So obviously, you know, the message is getting through. But you know, it's a hard business when you're trying to get one person at a time, one over. Yeah.
Sure.
Versus somehow blanketing your exposure out there in YouTube videos and other stuff. And the problem is, so you've got this great wife behind you. You know, my wife, she's a speech pathologist, and she still can't, after 20 years together, she still can't get me to speak clearly. You know, what's the point? Unbelievable. Yeah. So you've had a big advantage on the other half.
it certainly has made a big difference for me. It really has. And plus, you know, if you spend 10 minutes with me, you'll quickly figure out she's like the most patient woman in the world.
Okay, so we're going to pull out of this interview halfway through, because we actually spoke for about an hour. So we'll wrap it up there, and we'll include the second half of this chat in next week's episode. A lot of fun. I'm enjoying this conversation with Joe. It was a good laugh.
He's the nicest American we've spoken to this podcast.
You are a shocker. Oh, dear. So you just offended every other American we've interviewed.
I can't wait to talk to him again next week.
Yes, exactly. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
Thank you. And you too.
I will.
And you too.
Yes. We'll speak to you then.
Bye, everybody.
All right, mate. See ya. And that just leaves us with David Marlin's book review. And as David teased at the end of last week's episode, another book about night photography. Take it away, David.
Thanks, Bruce. Nightscape by David Kingham is an ebook specialising in photographing the night sky, as I alluded to in the last review. Now, unusually for me, this is an ebook, and doubly unusually, it's subtitled A Complete Guide to Photographing Under the Night Sky. There's that word complete again. But I will admit that this is a fairly comprehensive book. But before I proceed any further, I want to point out that this book is very geared to the Northern Hemisphere, so it's not so complete. So you need to do a few mental adjustments. But of course, revenge is ours, because we are fortunate enough in Australia to have far clearer views as well as richer sky fields than those in the north, particularly those in North America. Just ask Professor Brian Cox. Now let's get down to tin tacks. The book is 120 pages. It's divided, as you expect, into some logical order, but a little bit different to normal. The first part is a general chat about things like planets, the Milky Way, phases of the moon, meteor showers, constellations, satellites, and something else we don't see from Australia, the pole star. Now, that material might seem pretty heavy, but David presents each of these concepts with just a few paragraphs. So if you're not into astronomy, it's very, very digestible. And for good measure, the chapter, and indeed the whole book, is interspersed with David's excellent photographs and how he took them. He then moves into scouting. It starts with using planetarium software. Now, he uses Stellarium because it's free. Personally, I use Starwalk, although it does cost. But that's a really good start. He then talks about how to find dark skies. Now, again, that's a little bit US-centric because we've got lots of dark skies over here. But the principles are the same. Then he steps into the gear. Now, I like the fact that this comes well into the book rather than the start. So it's not a subliminal message up the front that says you've got to buy all this stuff or you can't do any of the things in this book. It's about these are the sorts of things you can take. This is the sort of gear you can use, and you don't always have to use the most expensive stuff. Then it's into the field. Now, rather than continuously boring you with a blow-by-blow account of the book, I'll focus on the first section of this one, which addresses fear of the dark. It's one of those things people don't really want to talk about, but David deals with it pretty well and also deals with dealing with the cold and how to compose in darkness. But you're still only halfway through the book. There is a whole section on shooting techniques and a section on post-processing. Both of them are, again, straightforward and comprehensive. Now, as part of the ebook purchase, there are a number of Lightroom presets. However, they're not magic solution recipes. They're designed to get you started in post-processing, and the book tells you how and how not to use them. Very important. All in all, it is a nearly complete book, except for those of us in the Southern Hemisphere. But I've got a really good resource to deal with the Southern Hemisphere stuff, but that's in my next review. Nightscapes by David Kingham is available for download from Craft and Vision, which is simply craftandvision.com, and Craft and Vision is all one word, lowercase. It costs $20 US. Cheers.
Fantastic. All right. We will talk with you again next week with the second half of the Joe Edelman interview. And until then, take care.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioToYou.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.